Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hello, Mark.
Good to see you once again. You are in studio to talk about your unapologetic case for trusts
this week.
So yes. Kind of a review. I know you're a fan of trusts. Wills or trusts are two ways to take care of our estates, but
right.
You think trusts are a better way, so we're going to kind of review some of that this week.
Yeah, I usually try to be more balanced in my approach. When we talk about estate planning in general, I typically lay out what the differences are between a will and a trust. And I've mentioned many times on the show that I favor trust, like you just said. It's really not a secret. And so instead of trying to be the politician and balance everything, I thought I'd just come out and say, well, why in the world is this trust instrument so much better? So what is it about a trust instrument versus a will that would kind of win the day, or why would I think that this is a better way to do estate planning? And really, I mean, for almost every individual, there are a few exceptions. We'll talk about them, but for a high majority of individuals, really, when we talk about estate planning, we should be looking at a trust instrument, and because there's just so many different advantages to using this type of an instrument. So why don't we kind of get into it?
Well, let's get into some of these. You gave me some bullet points to reflect on here. And the first one is, three major areas where trusts are better than wills. They're more flexible, it avoids probate, and it's also private.
Yeah, so these are really some of the strong suits of utilizing a trust. So people say, well, what are the main benefits of it? And these are the ones that you just mentioned. Number one, people like privacy. So we don't have to run to a probate court. Now, wills, unless you have everything that in joint assets or beneficiary designations, which most people do not, then we ultimately will be leading an estate towards a probate. So number one is a trust is a private family closing. It avoids the probate process when it's done properly and when it's done well. And so that can be a huge advantage. It also just simply takes care of the clients far better. There's many different tools and tricks that we can use in a trust. It is intended to be a more expansive and a more thorough document versus a will. In its simplicity, is supposed to be a very rudimentary document. It's supposed to simply say who gets what when I die and who closes my estate and court, here are your court instructions. So really, those are the only three things that a will in its simplicity is supposed to do. Now, there's different types of wills. People always try to throw tax provisions and other things in them, but I'm telling you, they simply don't work. And so the legal nomenclature could work, but they just practically don't work, and we're just not going to get there. So trusts end up being far more flexible for the user. Instead of going asset to asset to change your mind, to change a beneficiary, we go to the one document. We change one document and all the assets follow suit. Instead of in a will situation, we'd have to go asset by asset to make sure that everything is actually aligned with our intent. So would you rather go to one document and make a change, or would you rather have to track and remember and trace exactly who is getting what asset and how that asset is titled, how it's going to be passed if you die, to make sure that it's all working? So there is a convenience and a flexibility in a trust that a will could never provide. It is intended to be an overarching wrapper around the estate, and a will just simply does not accommodate that. So it's more flexible. We don't have to go to probate, and it ends up being a private document.
Mm-hmm. But it can be changed, though, too, can it? I mean, we
yes.
The situation we had The family trust, mom and dad, they both signed off on a certain trust. But then mom died first, and yeah. then dad, who was left afterwards, he changed it all afterwards.
Yes. So, well, and there's a whole backstory to that of how that's possible, which is most trusts are not administered properly when the first spouse dies. And so there is it's not an infallible document. There's only one way to really make it absolutely rock solid, work every time without any exception, and that is to put in a professional fiduciary. So if you put in my law firm, then I have a fiduciary duty, and I'm going to follow that instrument to the letter of the law. And so therefore, dad couldn't get in there and start changing stuff up because it would have been administered properly. And dad would have had his portion, mom would have had her intent realized versus only dad. So typically we don't like the idea that trusts, in order to make them perfect, would actually require an outside intervention.
Sure.
We resist that. And as a matter of fact, a high majority of planning that I even do is not geared that way. It is geared to be more flexible and a document that allows beneficiaries to enjoy but yet protect them, what their inheritance. So so we usually do not get into a place where we have to have this work. It just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So it could work that way. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, trusts are developed in order to promote control sometimes, but most people really don't want that type of control over their entire estate plan. They really just want to protect their family and do a good job. That's what a trust can do far better than a will.
Well, the probate, avoiding probate, and the privacy part, though, are so important because you are able to close things up. You don't have to wait. You can do what you need to do and don't have to wait for the court to approve everything you're doing.
Yeah, and it can almost be instantaneous as well. There's a fallacy here that we're dealing with also, which is that if I have a trust, it's going to avoid probate. Unfortunately, that is usually not true. And I really count this as an attorney error. It's really not the creator's error. So we call the person, a client of mine would be called the trust maker. They've made the trust. It's also known as a grantor. They granted the powers in the trust. So there's many different names that we call the trust makers, what I call them in my documents. So the trust maker, in order to make a trust really work well, and in order for it to accomplish the I want to avoid probate goal, we need to have all assets in it. And that is rarely accomplished in the traditional system. So unfortunately, most trusts that I've seen in the marketplace are templated. They look very similar. And they're designed for tax purposes. They're really not designed for family. They're not designed for generational wealth. They're designed for one thing, which is to make sure you don't pay an estate tax, at least to the best ability that we have with that document. So when we use a templated document, so they're going to be cheaper. They're going to be $3,500 up to $5,000 just to get a templated document. But then what happens is not only do we just get the templated document, whether it's from an attorney or whether it's on the internet or other places, then the next step is too often missed, which is we have to take all of our assets and get them into the name of the trust. So if I have the Paul Grant Trust, but I have my assets in my personal name, well, I have a disconnect. And unfortunately, most people that I come across that have not had work done by our firm, this is their story. They have a trust, but they have assets in their personal name. Sometimes they get the house in there. Like the house is the big deal. Okay, let's put that most expensive item we have into the trust. But it misses all the other assets. So until we get everything into a trust, we're not going to assure that we can get the goal of not working a probate system and have a private family closing. But so it's critical to have funding done right.
Some of the most expensive parts of the trust, though, can't be put in a trust, like your 401k or your IRAs cannot go in a trust.
So that is one of the only assets that really cannot be named in a trust. So when a trust is designed properly, and of course, again, that's the caveat of all this discussion, is that you have to have the trust that is actually created well. How do you know if it's created well? Unfortunately, you got to have an attorney review it. You have to have an attorney who does estate planning regularly review it. So IRAs, any type of retirement account, 401k, IRA, 403b, Roth IRAs, they are all tax-deferred accounts. So any tax-deferred account, deferred compensation accounts, all of these would be tax-deferred, and they typically, traditionally, would just go to a survivor's hands, or they would go to children or whoever else just by beneficiary designation. So in order to keep a tax-deferred account and have the characteristic remain, it must stay in your personal name. It cannot be put into trust. So we never move an IRA for the trust maker into a trust. But in our system, and again, please be careful with this. I promise you, this is not legal advice. Do not do this without an attorney watching over you. But in our system, we then designate the trust as the beneficiary so that when someone passes away, then that asset is captured by the trust, and we're right back to where we want it to be, which is the trust is going to be the overarching guide to every asset. And how do we protect family? How do we protect against taxes? How do we protect against creditors? So everything that we hope that a trust is going to do, if we get all the assets there eventually, it's going to do its job. So every asset but a tax-deferred account, you're exactly right, Mark, everything else should be in the name of a trust, okay? And sometimes there's fudging on that. The timeshares, oh, they're notorious for just costing you money, right? Mm-hmm. So just don't do them. However, if you've already made that mistake, then there's another fee just to get the timeshare into the trust. Most clients are not interested in having that be passed definitively to their families. Most people are saying, I'm just using that for my own personal travel. And so that may be one of the things that we fudge on. But, you know, most other things we want to get into the name of the trust. So having asset integration is critical to this process. And most trusts that I review do not have solid asset integration into the plan. Therefore, there is a high probability that that plan is still going to go to probate, even though you use a trust.
Now, you said the statement that the trust becomes the beneficiary of the retirement account. So review that. What do you mean? So if the person who died, it was their account, then instead of it staying in an IRA, now the beneficiary is the official trust. So that chunk of money then does go back into the trust.
It does go back into the trust, but the reason that this is such a delicate matter, you really need to have an attorney's voice before you do this over your estate plan, which is there's specific language that we can use in trusts so that a trust would be a qualified beneficiary. So I'm using air quotes. You can't see me on the radio do air quotes, but I'm doing air quotes over qualified beneficiary. That's an IRS term of art. And what it means is that the trust can hold an IRA and still get the tax deferred status as if it's a real person. So currently, if someone dies and they have an IRA, they leave it to a beneficiary. That beneficiary, provided that they're healthy and that there are no exceptions, they can now have a 10-year stretch out to that IRA. It used to be a lifetime. That changed about 3.5 years ago. Now it's 10 years. So if we have an estate or a trust be a beneficiary without being a qualified beneficiary, so in other words, the trust is absent of proper tax language, then the IRA either needs to be immediately cashed, or sometimes we can get a 5-year rule, but we can't use the 10-year rule. So this is why it's so critical to understand what type of a trust you have before you start listening to a radio show that's for educational purposes and start moving stuff. Right. Don't do that. So the IRAs can be held by a trust. You can get the same benefits as if you left it to a beneficiary, but plus additional benefits. Mm. Benefits of protection to the beneficiary, potential guidelines or assistance to the beneficiary if they are not managing money well, if they're disabled, or other qualifying factors. So in our system, we move all assets eventually to a trust. That's called financial integration. It is imperative that your trust is financially integrated. Otherwise, it will not work as you designed and what you think it's going to do.
Okay, talking about the benefits of using trusts in estate planning this week with Paul Grant. People are intrigued by your services. Paul, how do they find out more?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week, Paul is reviewing for us the benefits of using a trust in your estate plan. And you mentioned a few exceptions where maybe a trust wouldn't be the best option. What are some of those exceptions? Very few.
Yes. And in Paul's brain, that is absolutely true. Because remember, this really is an unapologetic case for trust. And so, therefore, trusts are a more flexible, powerful instrument in a high majority of estate plans. So why would we ever want to use a will when we can have a lot better flexibility, probate avoidance, and everything else? Well, there are a few times. Number one, if you just simply don't have very much. Now, this would really be a totality of the circumstances. So if you have very little assets. Now, what I'm talking about is 50, 60, no more than $100,000 worth of assets. And again, looking at the totality of the circumstances, in other words, all the beneficiaries that you plan on giving that money to, are they healthy? Are they on Medicaid? Are they disabled? Are they addicts? Do they have a good job? Or do you care about whether or not they will simply spend whatever you give them? So in those cases, because they're very small estates, there is a small estate affidavit that is possible. And Washington State has made that system very smooth. It's a unique process. So it's always good to have estate planning. Everybody needs estate planning. You always need a will or a trust. You always need your financial power of attorney. You always need a healthcare power of attorney and an end-of-life document. Those are the four major documents that every person who is considered an adult in Washington State must have. And so, okay, so adults, 18 or older. So college students, people who have their first job and are barely making it out of the gate. Every person needs to have these plans around them. A will is probably a very good starting point for most individuals instead of graduating into a trust. So the mentality of a will is, how much do we need to move? And if it is a smaller sum or for starting out, then that wrapper may be appropriate. But it's really not a wrapper to every asset. It's a system where assets need to go and be presented to the court, or they need to be, we need to use an affidavit process so that we can gain control of those assets and then distribute them. It is more of a honor system than it is a surefire way to make sure someone gets money. Now, we can also back that up by using beneficiary designations. If you have a bank account, you have the opportunity to name a beneficiary. So that is a great way to make sure that once we have death certificates, a beneficiary can walk into the bank, present the death certificate, say, I'm the beneficiary, fill out a form, and then they're going to be having access to their portion of that beneficiary amount, whatever it is. So backing up a will with beneficiary designations or joint assets, it's a great way to try to avoid probate. We can do it, but then you just got to trace it and you got to track it. You got to remember what you did in order to make the plan work properly. So a will is an all-encompassing or is not an all-encompassing, excuse me, is not an all-encompassing document. It only captures things that are in your name only, so not a joint asset, and does not have a beneficiary designation. So therefore, wills are not similar to a trust, where a trust is going to touch and protect all assets because everything is titled there, versus a will is sitting there only waiting in the wings to say, did we miss something? Mm. Did we not take care of it properly? And if the answer is yes, then we might throw it over to the will and get instructions through that way. So everyone needs really good estate planning. Everyone needs these major documents. It's imperative that you have them. Are wills appropriate? Yes, for some individuals. And but again, that is a totality of the circumstance viewpoint. What we want to look at all the beneficiaries to make sure that we don't have any possibility of somebody inheriting money that should have not. Mm. I tell this story occasionally, which is they were not a client of mine, but they died without a will, so intestate. And even if they had made a will, it probably would have gone to his only son, but the only son was a drug addict. And by the time this person actually passed away and we found the son, he was in jail. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. These are real life stories. So this person would have been highly benefited, even with approximately $120,000 was all that estate. The son would have highly benefited if we could have used a trust to protect him and make sure that he was going to use that money properly because he was not doing well. So therefore, even with a small sum, the question is, do you have someone that you want to protect and take care of? Or is everyone healthy and we can just use either beneficiary designations or a will? Yep, there can be a place for that instrument as well.
Well, it sounds like there are some disadvantages to a will. Are there some potential dangers then for a trust?
Yes, and I covered some of them already.
You kind of talked about some of this.
Yeah, the biggest one is
the template.
Is that it's templated. Mm-hmm. And so therefore you're paying for something that is standardized. Well, if I'm not mistaken, you probably look nothing like your neighbor, and meaning your assets, your family, the dynamics of it. And so I haven't even met you, and I can probably guarantee you that you and your neighbor are completely different. So how can one document then meet the challenges and the uniqueness that each of you has with a template? So I shy away from templates. I think that, is it better than nothing? I get that question all the time. Yes, something is always better than nothing, but not at the sacrifice of doing it right. Oh. So if it's because you had a health incident, you got to get something in place, do it. If it's because you're going to travel and you have nothing in place, yes, something is better than nothing, but it is not intended to be the final document. So it can be bubblegum on a dam. So go ahead and use a template, but it should not be the end result. And unfortunately, even when they are created by other attorneys, I see a lot of templated documents. Mm. Trust me, I know what they look like. They're templated. Tax language is outdated. It's worded inaccurately. The definitions are outdated. So I can spot when a document is templated. Also, funding. So we talked about getting all the assets in. There's another danger. Administrating it correctly. We talked about that with your own story, Mark. And so these are some of the dangers. Also, the passage of time. We get into the mentality, I did it. I checked off the box. And yet the law and taxes and your life and your finances and everything just keep moving. A stagnant document cannot keep up with everything. So that is one of the big mentality hurdles that we must get over, is that we need to do this more often than what people do. We need a program and a relationship with an estate planning attorney to really make it work well.
Looking at the case for trust this week, the unapologetic case for trust this week, Paul believes in trusts and that they are the best way to manage your estate. If you have questions for Paul, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, more of this next time, but that'll do it for this edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.